Okay, this is a reading from Matthew 18, 12 to 14. What do you think? If a man owns 100 sheep and one of them wanders away, will he not leave the 99 on the hill and go to look for the one that wandered off? And if he finds it, I tell you the truth, he is happier about that one sheep than about the 99 that did not wander off. In the same way, your Father in heaven is not willing that any of these little ones should be lost.
Thank you all for joining in the singing service this morning. Jeff, thank you for leading us in those songs. And all the men that do a part in our public worship, we always appreciate the men who are willing to do that and take part in that. But thank you most of all for being here this morning, because that's an important thing this morning as we come together on the first day of this week to worship together. We're going to look this morning and continue our study in the book of James. This morning we're going to look at one of the 11 major themes that we've outlined, or that we will be outlining as we go through the book this quarter. Last week we looked at joy and how we can be joyful in all circumstances. And we looked at the idea of even being joyful through trials and tribulations. And that's a hard thing. And we acknowledged that last week and looked at the difficulties therein. And also last week we introduced the idea of double-mindedness versus single-minded. And how as Christian we're to have that single frame and focus. And so often the world enters in and deception enters in. That's what we're going to look at, in fact, this morning. And the second major theme contained within this book is the single-minded Christian is always alert to the deceptions of the unrighteous. And as you were in class this morning, you looked at that thought. As you were in class, you probably looked at several verses, some of which we may also look at this morning as well. We're going to look at two different places in the book of James that this idea comes forth, and then concentrate on the latter of the two. Tonight, Joe will be speaking and also looking on this very same subject of deception, but he's going to be looking more at a personal level. How can we overcome deception? How can we overcome being deceived? So I invite you to be back tonight as we meet together at 6 o'clock this evening and continue this thought. But to begin with, let's look at James chapter 1 and verse 16, and then we're going to skip over and look at the last two verses found in the book of James. James chapter 1 and verse 16. A very simple verse. Six words if you're reading from the New International Version, which is what I have this morning. Don't be deceived, my dear brothers. We're going to kind of leave that there for the time being. Joe will pick up on that tonight and kind of look at that and have some really good information. So please plan on being here for that. But now let's flip over and look at chapter 5, verses 19 and 20. As we were talking this past week, we didn't want to duplicate our thoughts, and we were talking about deception, going to be looking at deception. So I want to look at these last two verses in the book of James. Verse 19, "My brothers, if one of you should wander from the truth and someone should bring him back, remember this, whoever turns a sinner from the error of his way will save him from death and cover over a multitude of sins." I want to spend our time this morning looking at these two verses. We're not going to spend much more time in James. We're kind of going to look at different verses throughout, mainly the New Testament is what we'll be looking at this morning. But I think we have such an awesome responsibility here as Christians, as brothers and sisters, the brothers and sisters that we have that maybe have fallen away, that maybe aren't a part of the body as they once were. And in the onset of all of this, I want to make sure you understand that attendance and faithfulness are different. You can be here this morning in attendance and be far from here. You may be sitting in a seat this morning and be miles away. Maybe someone here that couldn't be here this morning is very faithful. But I think we see as a trend, if the attendance is not there, the faithfulness maybe has waned, has lessened. But I want you to think this morning as we go through here, and I'm going to offer a challenge at the end of our thoughts this morning that I want and hope that you will take home with you and think about throughout this week. I want to just start with a few verses here this morning, and I want you just to listen as I read these, because I'm going to go through them fairly quickly, and don't even expect you to keep up. If you'd like to try, please do so, but I'm going to begin here with 1 John chapter 1 and verse 8. If we claim to be without sin, we deceive ourselves, and the truth is not in us. Also there in 1 John chapter 4 and verse 6, we are from God, and whoever knows God listens to us. But whoever is not from God does not listen to us. This is how we recognize the spirit of truth and the spirit of falsehood. Also 1 John chapter 2 and verse 21, I do not write to you because you do not know the truth, but because you do know it, and because no lie comes from the truth. Mark chapter 12 and verse 24, Jesus replied, are you not in error because you do not know the Scriptures or the power of God? 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33, a well-known verse, do not be misled. Bad company corrupts good character. And also Galatians chapter 5, verses 16 and 17, so I say, live by the Spirit and you will not gratify the desires of the sinful nature. For the sinful nature desires what is contrary to the Spirit, and the Spirit what is contrary to the sinful nature. They are in conflict with each other so that you do not do what you want. And I simply read those verses this morning to go through and see this idea of deception, or you can be deceived. There's two sides. We can sometimes take the wrong route. Truth can become false. Light can turn to darkness. Life can turn into death spiritually. I want you to think this morning as you sit here. You know, as I look for someone in the audience, someone will ask me, is so-and-so here? And I'll pin. What I usually do is look where they're normally sitting. You know, if I want to see if someone's here, we're pretty much creatures of habit. We tend to sit in the same seat. The only person that doesn't sit in the same seat is my wife. I can't ever find where she's sitting, which that's fine. I mean, that's no problem. She's here, and that's good. So, but we tend to be these creatures of habit. You look in your row this morning. Is there someone that used to sit there that isn't? Is there someone that used to be in the seat next to you that isn't any longer? I want to ask you the question, have you checked on that person? Have you considered that person? Have you prayed for that person? Have you found out why they're not here? Why they're not a part of the assembly? Have you taken time to get to know? I'd like to share with you a story in a way of introducing our thoughts this morning. This is a story of two friends who served during World War I. And of course, as they were serving there together, they spent much of the war involved in trench warfare, very much a part of the frontline action. And they suffered from terrible living conditions, and they were constantly under fire. The closeness of the trenches and the terror of the war drew these two friends closer and closer together. Very, very close relationship. They talked about life. They talked about their families and their hopes, and about their future, when they would be able to return home from the war. During one battle, when the troops had left their trenches and charged the enemy, Jim, one of the two friends, was severely wounded and fell on the battlefield. His friend Bill made it back to the trench. As the enemy shelling continued, Jim lay suffering all alone in no man's land between the two trenches. The shelling continued. Bill wanted to go to his friend so he could comfort him and encourage him only as a good friend could do. But the officer in charge that day refused to let Bill leave the trench because it was just simply too dangerous. However, the officer turned his back for just a moment. Bill left the trench and began to make his way toward his friend lying there. Shells exploded all around him, but he continued on. Finally, he made it to Jim. He managed to drag Jim back to the trench, but it was too late. His friend had died there in his arms. The officer, seeing what had happened, asked Bill and said, well, was it worth the risk? Without hesitation, Bill said, yes, sir. It most certainly was. My friend's last words to me made it more than worthwhile. He looked up at me and said, I knew you'd come. Do you have someone that may be saying that this morning? Do you have someone that you can reach out and touch this morning? And they may simply say, I've been waiting. I knew that you would come. I knew that you would come and ask me what was wrong. I knew that you would come and share with me. I knew that you cared about me. We read earlier from Matthew. Let's turn over and read Luke's account of the parable of the lost sheep. It's a short reading and one that you're very familiar with. But I want to look at Luke chapter 15 and begin there at verse 3 this morning. And they say, we're not spending much time in James to be talking about James. And if you think about deception and how one can be deceived, we have a responsibility toward that person. Luke chapter 15 and verse 3, then Jesus told them this parable. Suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Does he not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it? And when he finds it, he joyfully puts it on his shoulders and goes home. Then he calls his friends and neighbors together and says, rejoice with me, I have found my lost sheep. I tell you that in the same way, there will be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who do not need to repent. Three things when we're thinking about this subject of those that are lost, those that have maybe at one time been apart and no longer are. There are three really simple things that I want to touch on this morning. I want to kind of gear this around the story that we talked about, the battlefield, because we are at war. It's a constant battle. We're at war with Satan daily. And you may have seen that even as you strive harder to serve God, even as you strive more diligently, as we've been looking at, making this a very practical study, saying, hey, this is part of my life. I want to do this. I can do this. Satan is there at each and every turn. And we are at war. We know that we've lost some along the way. Number one, you simply have to observe your environment. Figure out where you are. Look around. You know, so often we don't pay the attention that we need to. That's something that we could all probably learn for. You know, in order for people to, or to see people who have strayed away from God, we have to pay attention. We have to know our surroundings. Know who's there. Know who's not there. Know who is apart. You know, the world's philosophy has always been, look out for yourself because no one else will. God says, rather, to consider others better than ourselves. And if you look at that word consider, it means think about, ponder, hold in high esteem. Consider others. So often we're looking inwardly. We need to be looking around, looking and observing our environment. We get caught up in the my little world syndrome. You know, the world in which we live is much bigger than we are. And anytime I'm talking, I include myself in this. The story was once told of the rich man. He was kind of a cranky old man. And he was really not enjoying life. He was just having all kinds of problems. And he thought, well, I'm going to go visit my minister and see if he can help me out. So he went down and talked with his minister and kind of explained the situation. The minister knew the man and all of the money that he had. And the minister simply got up from his chair there and invited the man to come over. His office was up on a second story that overlooked the park. He said, look out this window, old man, and tell me what you see. The old man says, well, of course I see families. I see mothers, fathers, kids playing and having a good time. He said, okay, come over to the other side of my office where he had a mirror on the wall. He said, look in that mirror and tell me what you see. A little bit perplexed. Get that out in a minute. What is that word? Perplexed. That's what I was trying to say. A little bit perplexed. He looked and said, well, of course I see myself. What else would I see? The minister simply said, you know, this is very odd. You look in two pieces of glass. Look through two pieces of glass, yet the one that is tinted with silver is the one in which you see yourself. His life was tinted with what he had. His life was tinted with the money that he had, the things that he called his own, completely changed his perception. So often we look inwardly and fail to really realize our environment. Philippians chapter 2, verses 3 and 4 says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility consider others better than yourselves. Each of you should look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. Look around. So often we're looking inwardly. We need to change our view. You know, if we truly want to see our friends come back, we have to know that they're gone. We have to be aware of our environment and know that they're no longer a part of our world. And if noticed that, take note and concern in that. We look at our environment and then we begin the search and rescue. That's number two. Be aware of your environment, and then if we're looking in this idea of being at war, those that are missing, we don't just say, well, maybe they'll come back. Maybe they'll be back and everything will be fine. You know, the friend didn't do that. He didn't leave his friend out there between the trenches. He went to him. Went to where he was. And, of course, took action there. We do whatever it takes. Love is the key to reaching people who have walked away, drifted away, or strayed away from God. Love being that key. Do you have that love this morning? Where's your heart this morning? Where's my heart this morning? We realize time is of essence, as in anything. This is something that we have to take into consideration as well. And it may take some blood, sweat, and tears. Nobody said that it would be easy to rescue. No one said that it would be an easy thing to do. As the friend went out to rescue his friend, he dodged the bullets that were coming in, the shells that were bombing over his head. But his main concern was reaching that friend who was down, reaching that friend who was hurt, and getting to him to see how he could help. Caring for the souls of people isn't an easy thing. Working to see people return to God takes on a whole new perspective if we can put ourselves in their position. That's not entirely possible to do, but we need to be much more cognitive of the feelings of those around us. So rescue. And then number three, simply restore people. Sometimes we have to forget about yesterday, don't we? There may be someone that comes to your mind as we're talking this morning, and maybe it's someone that you've at one time or another crossed paths. Maybe in not a very good way. Maybe they've even done something to you that affected you in a negative way, and you've never really been quite the same with that person because you've never really maybe made the effort to be. Forgetting about yesterday. Restoring people. A story was once told. This happened in 1947, which was almost 2 years after the liberation of Auschwitz. Corrie Ten Boom, many of you have heard and even read books of this lady. And she had stepped forward on occasion to share a message of forgiveness and healing. As she stepped forward to share her words, she just encouraged that particular situation. So much hurt there. So much a time of fighting and healing needed to take place. And she hoped that she could be of assistance in doing this. And as she finished her message the morning that she was speaking, a man stepped forward, moved his way through the crowd of people, and wanted to get to her, wanted to say something to Corrie. He looked familiar to her, looked like someone that she had seen before. And then as she looked in her eyes, it came to her where she had seen this gentleman before. It was in the very camps where so many people had been put to death. In fact, her sister had died at the very hands of this man who had come to see her. The memories came flooding back to her, memories from Auschwitz and this man who had been a guard at the camp. This man said to her, he said, "I'm a Christian now." He said, "I know that God has forgiven me, but can you forgive me as well?" Corrie, of course, after having spoke about healing, forgiveness, bringing people back together, and then put in that very real situation of doing that very thing, she struggled. She paused for what seemed like an eternity to her at the time, probably only a minute or two, and simply said, "Yes, I will. Yes, I must forgive you." And it was on that very day that former guard and former prisoner were both healed somewhat of the hurt that was there so very few years before that, even just a couple of years before. How do we apply that to our life? If the person you're thinking about that has fallen away, if the person you're looking to help or to restore, to bring back, is someone that in some way has erred you, some way there's something happened, go to that person. Straighten that out. Forget about the past and say, "Let's do better. Let's go on from here." You know, it's been said about the church that we kill our own wounded. I sometimes wonder if that's not the case. Those that are wounded, those that are hurting, do we offer a hand or an arm and say, let me help you back? Or do we sometimes run over them? Or do we sometimes even not acknowledge that they're there and that they are hurting? In order to see people who are missing in action, as we take the war theme, come back to the right relationship with God, we're going to have to let go of the past in some cases. Their past. Say, do better. From here on out, let's do things differently. From here on out, let's look at the Word of God. Let's just strive to live our lives in accordance with that. And it is our ministry in doing this. 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 18 says, "All this is from God, who reconciled us to Himself through Christ and gave us the ministry of reconciliation. We are therefore Christ's ambassadors. As though God were making His appeal through us, we implore you on Christ's behalf, be reconciled to God." We're Christ's ambassadors. We're the spokesman, the spokesperson that goes on behalf of God. How often do we ask the question, well, whose duty is it anyhow Why should I bother? Here I am, I'm just trying to do things. I really don't want to get into other people's business. I just want to live my life. Leave me alone in doing that and I'll be just fine. There's a story told about a shipwreck. This was years ago off the Pacific Northwest coast. There was a crowd of fishermen in a nearby village. They gathered to watch the ship as it smashed against the rocks. A lifeboat was then sent out to rescue those after the wreck, and they had sent this lifeboat out and they were able to retrieve all of the sailors but one. And on their way back, one of the rescuers explained, there was no room in the lifeboat for him, so we told him to stay by the ship and someone would come back for him. Then he asked the question, who will come with me? An old lady then cried out to her son, don't go, Jim, don't go, my son. You see, I've already lost your father to this terrible sea. A few years ago, your brother William sailed out and we haven't heard from him since. Jim, you're all I've got left. Don't go. Let someone else take on this duty. Let someone else rescue this person who is still out there. Jim listened patiently to his mother's pleading, and then he said, Mother, I must go. It's my duty. I must do this. So the onlookers watched as the men in the lifeboat fought their way back out to rescue this one that was left. Anxiously, of course, there on shore, Jim's mother wept and she prayed. When they saw that the boat was heading back, it was just a frail shell tossed against the tremendous waves. And at last, when it came close enough, those on the shore shouted, did you get him? Jim shouted back, yes, and tell my mother that it's William. The one she was concerned about had lost and didn't even want her son to go out. He could have easily said, it's not my duty. We've lost two in my family. I'm not going to go out. I'm not going to be a part of this rescue. Send someone else. How often do we do that in our lives? How often do we do, okay, I'm going to let someone else do it. It's the minister's job. The elders will check on that. Someone in church will take care of that person. I don't think I need to do that at this time. You know, a few months back, I had the opportunity to study with a young lady. And I had seen her several times here at church. And as I would meet her, I would talk with her and try to strengthen a relationship where she would feel comfortable of sitting down and studying in God's Word one-on-one. And as I continued to talk to her, one night I finally got courage up and I said, would you like to study with me? She said, I thought you would never ask. How often do you think someone has come into your life that you can reach out and do something for, and you wait saying it's not the right time or it's not the right place or I'm not the right person for the job? And the reply would be, I thought you would never come. Or I thought you would never ask. The challenge I want to leave with you this morning, I hope you realize there's nothing hard about this, but we realize people will be deceived. We realize deception is a part of this world, because Satan is a part of this world. And if some people are deceived, they may fall away. And we don't go to them with a holier-than-thou attitude saying, you need to do something different. You need to do something better. I'm right and you need to come to where I am. We go to them and say, can I help you? We go to them and say, can I pray for you? We go to them and say, I'm concerned. Can I help you in any way? The challenge I want to leave with you this morning is this. And any time a challenge is offered, the challenger should be up to the challenge as well. And I have thought of two people, and I'm going to make contact with them this week. And I want you to think of someone, because you can. Everyone in this audience this morning can think of someone that could use some encouragement. Someone who has been deceived that could use an encouraging word. I want you to make contact with that person this week. You may be the only person that could reach them. You may be the only person that could reach out to them and make a difference in their life because of a special relationship that you have with them. How sad it is to hear that phrase, I thought you would never come. There may be some here this morning who are in attendance, but that's about it. You're here this morning, but your heart is far away. You're here this morning, but you're not focused. You know your life spiritually is not where it should be. And maybe this morning is the time you want to make amends. We have a shepherd that will pray for you in just a few moments if that is your need this morning. whether it's prayers asking for forgiveness or something that's happened in your life as a Christian, or just encouragement, strength to do better, strength to enter that battle. Or maybe there's one here this morning who hasn't put on Christ yet through baptism and would like to take that step. If you're subject to the invitation, won't you come as we stand and sing?